Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Hello and welcome to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Mark Etheridge. Today we're going to recap week three around the SEC. A heck of a weekend, jam-packed weekend. A lot of results to go over. We're going to try to go in depth on a couple things, but the reality of the situation in this episode is that we're going to have to bounce from thing to thing a little bit because there's a lot to talk about. And, there's just no time to go in depth with all of it because Mark and I are kind of chatty and we'd be here for several hours if we try to do that. So we're going to have to move a little bit. But before we get into any of that, I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by Pitch Logic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See pitchlogic.com for more information. The listeners at home, Mark, don't know that I really fought through that ad read fighting off a burp. So that was that was a heroic effort for me. The listeners did not know that.
Yeah, boy.
Sometimes you gotta play through stuff. That's right. As I said, Mark, a big weekend. This was obviously the most high-profile non-conference weekend of the bunch, and boy, we're going to pay for it next weekend when there's really not a lot. But I guess that's a good opportunity for us all to catch our breath before the conference season starts. So it's probably not all bad. So, let's start, Mark. With go ahead.
I was just going to say this is the weekend everyone tests themselves. Right. Cause and then, in case something happens, you have next week to get right and get quote momentum as you head into conference play. So, and you had for the most part, the SEC did really well. I mean, there was maybe a couple of exceptions, and I think even South Carolina, and we'll talk about this. I mean, you lose a pair of one run games to Clemson the way that they did. I mean, I wouldn't be feeling bad about that. I mean, obviously you don't want to lose those games, but it's not like you really showed that you couldn't compete, right? It was anyone's game. You make one more play in either game. It's a split or maybe you even sweep it. Right. And then there's Missouri and we can talk about that, but I think everyone else is kind of feeling okay, heading in after this weekend.
Yeah, let's talk. It was kind of hard discussing even where to begin here, but I feel like it's appropriate to start with LSU.
Okay.
Good weekend there. Went 3-0. The big win obviously was Texas. Yeah. The other two wins are UL and or Louisiana. The artist formerly known as UL Lafayette. Although in Baton Rouge they're probably still referred to as UL Lafayette. Or a more derogatory term perhaps, and then Texas State on Sunday, but a good 3-0 week overall. I think that the big takeaway I have with them is what we knew to be true all along looks even more true now, which is just this pitching staff and the starting pitching in particular is elite of the elite as long as it stays healthy and in form.
Right.
Luke Holman is a true Friday guy. Gage Jump, I think there's still some rust you're knocking off there. I think it's going to be really into SEC play before they're comfortable really pushing him. But in the time he was in there against the Cajuns, looked really good. And then today, Thatcher Hurd took a step forward from where he was last weekend. It's still not perfect, but I think you and I talked about this last week. I just think it's at the point where we just have to accept that Thatcher Hurd is not going to be the type of starter who dominates games and has a bunch of clean games. He's a workhorse that can give you innings. He's got good stuff. He can win you a lot of ball games, but he was going to be miscast if you were looking for him to be dominant Friday dude. Maybe he'll prove me to be wrong as time goes on, but I think he's a perfectly acceptable SEC starter. I think a lot of the negativity around him last year has kind of worn off. I think people have warmed to him locally at LSU, but I do think he's in a good spot now where he can just be one of the rotation guys, as opposed to, let's imagine a world where Luke Holman doesn't transfer, right? Like Alabama doesn't have the upheaval it had, and Luke Holman stays at Alabama, and you know, maybe you're unsure about Gage Jump. They would have been really leaning on, we need Thatcher Hurd to be our Friday guy. And if he's pitching on Friday with the way he's performed, like you'd kind of be going, I don't know. But because we know he's okay, he's a Saturday or Sunday guy, you feel a lot better about what you're getting there. So to me, that's kind of the big takeaway from an LSU perspective is like, man, this team can really pitch. They're in a really good spot. And if there were any doubts before, given the competition of the first two weekends, I think we know now, taking a step up in competition level, that this is going to be a team that's just going to win differently. And that's not better or worse. It just is what it is. But they showed against what I would say is pretty good competition. Not excellent, not elite, but pretty good teams. I mean, the over-under on how many of the three teams they saw this weekend at being in a regional, I'd set at 1.5. You know, because we feel good about Texas probably being there, but it's like which one of Texas State or UL like ends up being there, or does neither of them? So it's good competition for sure. Like you can be, I mean, not it's like a not unlike the SEC. It's like a poor man's.
There's not a lot of difference between say 1 and 8, right?
Right.
They're all really competitive.
Yeah. A little bit of a poor man's SEC where you can be a good team in the Sun Belt and it just might not be good enough. I think about, not to get us too far afield, but like Old Dominion last year was a good team that just didn't win enough games, you know, in a good league. So anyway, felt good about LSU's pitching to me, Mark. That was the big takeaway from their weekend.
Yeah. I like moving her to Sunday. Let's take some of the pressure off of him and just kind of let him do his thing, come out, do that. And if Jump's going to pitch the way he did and they can continue to stretch him out, I mean, that gives you a 1-2 with Ian Holman. That's they'll match up with just about anybody. And you know, when Holman came into LSU, I mean, I expected him to eat innings. I didn't expect the strikeout numbers that we're getting. I mean, he's getting double digit strikeouts every week. So, I mean, he's becoming that Friday SEC guy that, you know, we wondered where that was going to be. You know, you had Skeens and you had others last year, but we didn't really know who that top guy was going, or one of those top guys were going to be. Hagen Smith, obviously he's one, but who else, who's going to be that dominant kind of ace? And I don't know that he's that, but he's certainly making a case to be, but based on how he's pitched so far. And I really like what he's done to this point, just going out and, you know, workmanlike, doing his job. And that's what I expected, but he's been better than that. He's been more than your workhorse. So I like that. And I think the other thing is with Hurd, if you push him back to Sunday, I mean, even if he doesn't go well, you've got Cade Anderson who's pitching so well, you know, in midweek and things like that. He could even be the Sunday guy. You could use Hurd multiple times in a weekend like he was last year. And maybe he flourishes in that role, right? Not that I'm giving up on him as a starter, but because he certainly pitched well today for the first, say, four innings. He was really good. So it's an interesting, you know, usage of your pitching staff roles and responsibilities. The other thing I'll say on LSU is that they're not a team that's going to get a ton of hits. You know, they've had several games this year where they got, you know, 4 to 8 hits. And, you know, you think about LSU, you're thinking about your minimum of you're going to get 10, 12, 15 hits. But what they do, one, that they hit some home runs, but two is they take a lot of pitches, they drive up pitch counts, they make guys work, they get into your bullpen. And if you're not going to get a ton of hits, you're going to, you know, you better get walks, you better get hit batsmen, you better, you know, move runners and things like that. And they're doing those kinds of things, which is, you know, which is encouraging if you're LSU, because I do think the hits are going to come. There's so much talent in that lineup. They're going to be guys that are continue to ascend. And as a result, that's going to be, I think, the offense that you see in May, especially when the weather warms up and Alex Box, that plays small. I think that offense is going to be a lot better than it is right now. But at this point, they're kind of piecing it together, so to speak, and it's working. But I think this is going to serve them well later when they face that challenging arm, you know, where hits are at a premium, because that's kind of the way they're playing right now. So, you know, it's an interesting team. Like you said, much different than what we're used to seeing out of Baton Rouge.
A couple of things on the offensive side that I like. First of all, your story on Jared Jones was well-timed, Mark. Mm-hmm. He continues to swing the bat well. And I plugged it on Weekend Waypoints a couple times, but if you're listening to this and you haven't read it, go read Mark's piece on Jared Jones from late last week. The home run he hit, I think it was Friday against Texas. Just a backside home run, like 12 rows deep, opposite field, 12 rows. I mean, that's just like college hitters didn't used to do that, even with the really hot bats, right? She's just got so much raw power.
He can miss hit balls and hit them out. Yeah, I mean, he's that kind of power.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in some ways, you know, that's kind of what you've heard about. Like Blake Burke, and Blake Burke has struggled to kind of be consistent and put it together, but he still has games Blake Burke does, or pitches at bats mm-hmm. where Blake Burke just mishits a ball and it just still takes off because he's got that kind of mm-hmm. power. The other thing offensively is I think Steven Milam is here to stay as like a guy for them. There was some thought that he might get squeezed because you knew you were going to have Tommy White at third base. You knew that LSU, at least for the early part of the season, was going to be committed to Michael Braswell at shortstop. You know, and then first base, you were looking at, you know, probably Jared Jones.
Yeah.
So, and at second base, they were talking about, well, mm-hmm. could Josh Pearson play there, or could we put Brady Neal? Could we convert Brady Neal to a second baseman so that we can get his bat in the lineup, right? Because catcher is so, with Travinsky and Malazzo, is already so crowded. And then Milam has just kind of stepped in and said, nope, actually, I'm going to do this. And he's been great offensively, leads the team in hitting through three weekends. He's, you know, he's not striking out a ton, which as a freshman is kind of the thing you look for, is the strikeout to walk thing like off kilter. But no, he's taken walks, and he seems to be right in the middle of things. And he already kind of also seems to have that cult following thing going at LSU. I saw a story written about him. Koki Riley, who covers LSU locally, wrote about, you know, his nickname being Monster and why that came about. He's already kind of got like a little bit of a following there, which, you know, is cool to see that they've already embraced him that way. So that to me was something I came away with, is like this guy who's, you know, little tiny middle infielder from New Mexico, you know, is you know, playing really well in Baton Rouge. And I'm, you know, kind of excited to see what's next for him. Cause it's just a different archetype of player than we're used to seeing succeed in the SEC, to put it, to put it mildly.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Yeah. Was he and Jake Brown really, you know, two freshmen who come in, and is there room for both of them to play? And they've both been pretty good so far. So it's really going to be interesting how that shakes out. Who's going to be in the everyday lineup versus, or will they continue to just rotate guys and play matchups and hunches and all those kinds of things? Because it's a good problem to have, right? You have more starters than you have spots. There's a lot of clubs, you know, would love to have that, you know, have what Jay has. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, because I'm kind of getting on a tangent here, but one of the most interesting things this year is just checking LSU's lineup every day, because it's always different. You have guys in different places in the lineup. You don't know who's going to play every day. It's really, you know, one of those kinds of roster management things that can be fascinating. You're on mute.
Gosh. That happens less often than you think, though. I always have to remind myself.
You're not Kindle.
I'm doing all right.
I mean, no one's Kindle.
It happens once or twice a podcast to Kindle, so I'm doing all right. Yeah, it's a different challenge than last year. LSU last year, and I mean this in a good way, just didn't have much lineup flexibility because they knew who their guys were. You know, they'd mix a little bit, especially when Travinsky got hot. You know, you started seeing like different catching things and moving him around and whatnot. But yeah, for the most part, they knew who their guys were, and obviously it worked. So there's no argument there. Let's move on to Alabama, Mark, a team that continues to impress and continues to kind of reset expectations. And they went out this weekend and played good competition, went 2-1. They did finally lose their first game of the season after an 11-0 start. They lost on Sunday to Dallas Baptist in extra innings. No shame in that. DBU, good program, we had them ranked in the top 25 coming into the weekend. Talented. Like, I don't think anybody who knows college baseball is going to come away from that loss and think anything negative there. So a good weekend overall for Alabama. I know you've got some specific thoughts on Alabama stuff, but I will say that I think it's huge for this team that the guys who are leading the way offensively for them are guys like Gage Miller, Justin LeBron, TJ McCants, like the guys that we looked at before the season of, if this Alabama offense is going to be as good as it needs to be, if they want to contend with maybe hosting again or what have you, you know, the guys we pinpointed as needing to be those breakout stars have largely been the breakout stars. So we'll see once they're facing SEC pitching week after week after week. History is littered with teams that look great offensively, you know, through the first 4 weeks and then fizzle out. Shout out to last year's Ole Miss team. So things can happen, but through 3 weeks, like, that unit has been really impressive to me when you couple it with, oh yeah, these guys also have a really talented pitching staff and may have found some, they might have some found money on the pitching staff, it looks like.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's start with Ben Hess on Friday. I mean, we talked earlier about, you know, the top pitchers in the SEC, and this guy's been really good so far. I mean, he's striking out double digits every week. He's not giving up very much, and he's a guy that could continue to ascend, right? Because he didn't pitch a whole lot in the preseason, so he's continuing to get better. The one guy that's been a surprise for me is a freshman lefty. Matthew Heiberger came in, had some expectations heading in, but certainly was not expected to be a key piece of this bullpen. And boy, is he. He pitched really well in their extra inning game against UAB that they won midweek. Came in on Saturday in that wild game, you know, that Alton Davis kind of, his pitch count got up. He was going three ball count on everyone and ended up taking him out. Heiberger came in and ended up getting the save in that game. You know, that was the game where Arizona tried to steal home with two outs, one run game, two strikes, you know, in the ninth inning. And that's how the game ended. And Heiberger just stepped off the rubber, threw home, and they tagged him out. It wasn't close. Right. So anyway, so he comes in on Sunday in that game, and there's, I think it's two on in the bottom of the, or two on in the eighth inning. And he strikes out the next five batters. He only faced five batters. He struck them all out. I mean, so this is a guy that, you know, you have high hopes for a freshman, but you don't expect anything like this. So if he and Davis can give you two left-handed arms like that at the end of the game, Alabama becomes much more dangerous, right? So yeah, I'm sure they're disappointed. They lost, you know, in 12 innings. It was kind of a weird deal. They gave up a three-run inning. They had a pretty good lead, gave up three runs, dropped a fly ball in left field. The next guy hits a bomb, right? And then you lose an extra inning. So, you know, when you lose a game like that, you're always going to go back and look at those kinds of plays. But to your point on the offense, I do think that, you know, they're going to hit home runs. I don't know that they're going to continue to hit for the average they are, especially some of the, you know, once the stuff improves in conference, but there's some thump. I do think that they're going to be a team that, you know, lives by the walk and the single and the three run bomb. And I do think that there's a place for that, you know, as we talked about, that if you have that power, then that kind of covers up some of the holes. And that's going to be interesting because, you know, losing Riley Quickhurt and Ferone and Moza have been okay, you know, in those other two spots behind Hess, but not, you know, not what they were expecting out of Quick. So it's going to be interesting to see what they look like as the season progresses.
The walk, the single, and the three-run homer, I believe that we call that an Earl Weaver.
Yeah.
Those who remember that reference, mm-hmm. which is before both of our times, frankly. But was Earl Weaver, was he still like an active manager when you were coming up, when you were?
He was. Yeah, I'm that gray at this point. Yeah.
All right. Well, I was trying to give you the benefit of the doubt, but
no one could light up an umpire like Earl.
Well, that's true. That's so fair. Although Lou Piniella would like a word in that conversation.
Yeah.
That's the guy when I was growing up who was known as the guy who could light up an umpire. Him and Bobby Cox, which I know you're familiar with. Like Bobby Cox was known for that.
Bobby just opened his mouth and get kicked out of the game. I mean, it was, he led the world in ejections.
Doesn't he actually have the record for managerial ejections? Like he has to. He managed for so long.
He knew the magic words to get their attention.
That's right. That's right. Moving on. I saw South Carolina Clemson this weekend. First game was rained out. Mark, I know you're going to write a little bit about this in the weekend dish, but we really saw this weekend, just as an aside, the limitation of the three venue rivalry series setup that Clemson, South Carolina does, that Georgia Tech does. In that both of those series got interrupted and because of the format couldn't really work around the rain. Right. So the Georgia Tech series like tries to get going on Friday, but gets suspended. And now they're in a weird situation where, you know, because they could not resume at the different venue. I mean, I guess they theoretically could have, but you know,
they chose not to. Both teams have to agree. Right.
And there, yes, exactly. And there are reasons why I understand why someone wouldn't agree to that. Because of that, you can't get to finish that game. So now you're in a situation where the only way to finish that game is to, at some point, have Georgia in a midweek bus down to Atlanta, which the trip itself is not that far, but consider that they only need to play like four more innings. So are you going to take a couple hour bus ride over to Atlanta? And Georgia's winning, so they'll probably be motivated to do it theoretically if they need it. But that's a lot of work to play four innings. You know, it's just not a great situation.
Yeah, I would question Georgia Tech's motivation more than Georgia's. I think Georgia wants that win and take that three game sweep and the road win and the RPI love and all that. But for Georgia Tech, I'm going to come back and start up down six
runs. Yeah,
I don't think so, buddy.
Yeah, unless Georgia's RPI is so good that just playing the game helps Georgia Tech, you know?
Maybe there's your hope, right?
Yeah. But in the series I was at, you know, they waited a long time to make a decision on Friday, and I have to assume that's just because they knew that, hey, if we bang this game, doubleheaders off the table because of the three-venue format, and so we end up with two games instead of three.
So let me ask you this, because what I had hoped that they would do is, since, you know, it's two venues, but they're like 5 miles apart, couldn't you have played the early game on campus at Founders and then, you know, maybe pushed the second game to the evening and played it that way? I mean, I don't know how that would work, but
right.
I mean, I think technically it'd be possible, but it's easy for us to say that, you know, from the outside.
Yeah, it would have theoretically been possible because you're right. Like, they're, you know, the first two games were both in Columbia. It's just one was at a neutral site. So, but I have to assume, and neither Mark or I work in event logistics, but I think they had a couple things working against them. One is just the finer point to put on it is that the neutral site game was at 4 o'clock, which means if you were going to keep that game time, like, you were going to have to start the game at Founders at like 11 a.m. at the latest, right? And actually, that's not even nearly enough time. You'd have had to start it a lot earlier than that.
I think you'd have had to push that back. You could have gone right, like 12 and 7 or something.
Right. Which brings me to my second thing, which is that, you know, it might sound easy to do that, but consider that A, now you're bringing a third party into it. So the Columbia Fireflies staff a lot of that game. And so you have people who have had this on their schedules, and not just like the grounds crew and the operations people, but the bartenders and the concessions people and the ushers and the parking lot attendants. And so now you're going to tell all these people, and look, I get that it's part of the deal, but like, that's easier said than done to be like, hey, by the way, and mind you, 24 hours beforehand or 48 hours at most, you're telling them, hey, by the way, I know you were supposed to be here at 2 o'clock to help start parking cars, but we're actually going to need you to get here more like 4 or 4:30. Like, so, but when, and that as a one-off, that's not a big deal, but then you have to do that 100 times for 100 different jobs. Mm-hmm. You start to understand why, like, and by the way, like the Columbia Fireflies want, I'm sure they're getting a cut of something, right? Mm-hmm. Concessions and drinks and whatnot. Like, changing the game time is not going to increase attendance in any way. So mm-hmm. it can only hurt them. So anyway, focusing on the baseball though, Carolina goes 0-2. I don't have any on the panic meter. I am super low. I will get to some critiques, but generally I'm low on the panic meter. Look, you lost 2 one-run games to a very good rival, right? And that stings, yeah. But I don't think is really necessarily any reason for worry. And I do like that in both games, Carolina made a late push. Now, mm-hmm. mostly that was on Ethan Petrie home runs.
Right.
So like, I don't want to give the whole team too much credit for that, but yeah, they did make pushes late in those games. So that's something. My critiques though are a couple things. One is that, and I'll admit that I haven't gone back and watched a lot of Carolina's first 2 weekends against whoever the first one was. And then Belmont the second mm-hmm. weekend. However, so I have seen a little bit, and just in my look this weekend, the offense felt stagnant and the numbers themselves aren't bad for a lot of guys, right? Like, let's set Petrie aside, cause like he's swinging the bat well, great. No notes for him. Like Dylan Brewer has good numbers. Talmadge LeCroy has good numbers. Kennedy Jones technically has good numbers. Like, there were some bad swings I saw from him Saturday, but generally speaking has good numbers. But it just felt like, I mentioned the Petrie home runs late in the games. Well, that was like a third of their runs this weekend were those two ninth inning home runs, those 2 days for them. And then if you factor in the Cole Messina home run, the first inning of today, that's half their runs they scored all weekend. So it just felt like some South Carolina offenses from the last few years, which could sometimes be a little stagnant and felt like everyone's just kind of standing around in the batter's box, just waiting for somebody to put a jolt into one. Mm-hmm. That's easy for me to say now, because in hindsight, I saw the offense this weekend and they didn't do enough, especially in Saturday's game. I mean, they played 12 innings. They only had 9 hits. Mm-hmm. So, and it was, you know, today, Sunday, they were 2 for at least at one point, they were 2 for 15 with runners on base. And so that's easy for me to say now, but it felt that way to me. It felt like there was a lot of, it's like in basketball where they say, you know, you got 4 offensive guys standing around watching the one guy dribble.
Yeah.
It felt like the baseball equivalent of that. I don't just mean like Petrie and everyone else. I just mean in general, it was kind of like, hey, you know, we're going to get excited when some guy hits a tank, but there weren't a lot of like big threats, you know. It all felt very isolated. The mm-hmm. the times they scored runs.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about, you know, pitching staff? Because I mean, with you know, you shortened it to 2 games, so you get to see, you know, the second and third starter, you know, today in Sunday's games. You know, where are you at? Because that was really a lot of our question heading in. Would they pitch enough? I think we all think they're going to hit a lot of home runs. You know, you brought up some points about, are they going to do other things to score runs? But from a pitching standpoint, what do you like? What are you concerned about?
Yeah, and I'll say finally on the, like, I think the offense is ultimately going to be very, like, good to very good. So I'm not ultimately very worried there. Like, Messina's not going to hit one whatever for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. On the pitching staff, so I like it. I like the staff from what I saw more than what I thought I would feel going into the season, if that makes sense. It's late and it's been a long day, so my words are kind of eluding me, but I like what I saw more than I thought I would. I guess it's the best way to put it. I'm still not convinced, unless the offense is very good to elite, that it's going to be good enough for Carolina to be a team that, like, you look at the end of the year and say, like, this, I could see this team making it to Omaha. Mm-hmm. Eli Jones and Dylan Eskew, I saw their starts, and they're both kind of the guy that they're fine right up until they're not. And then it's like, feels a little bit like a fire drill to get people warmed up in enough time, right? I mean, that's exactly what seemed to happen today with Eskew, where it was like no action in the bullpen, no action in the bullpen. And then all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, we need to get somebody warming. Mm-hmm. And that's not a critique of the coaching staff. That's just how quickly that happened, right? And it felt like that with Jones to a lesser degree. I think Jones was a little sharper. I liked some of the things he did better. But those two guys, you know, they felt similar in that way. Kimball was interesting. Now Kimball comes in relief, and there's a part of me that wonders, like, I know that Jones and Eskew have a little more, not even so much Eskew, because he was only on the team last year. What I was going to say is that there's a little more proof there in a South Carolina uniform. That's not really true, but with Kimball, I do think there's a very real chance we get to the meat of SEC play and he's your Friday starter. Because he came in there today and it was just a different deal from what we saw from Eskew in that game. And then even Eli Jones, the previous game, where, you know, Eskew is going to have to get ground balls. He's not going to pile up strikeouts. Eli Jones isn't that guy either, but Kimball can dominate a game. Doesn't mean he's going to a lot or all the time or anything, but like, he came in there and it was very quickly shifted from, hey, let's throw a bunch of strikes and try to get some ground balls and have one or two pitch at bats, to Kimball was in there like, I'm going to throw this past you. And, you know, how can I control this game? And it, you know, he got touched up for some things and that's going to happen. But I liked his high end ability. And I do wonder if there is a future where he's pitching on Fridays. The revelation though, with the staff, is my last thing here, is Garrett Gainey. Out of the bullpen, he was the last guy on the mound for Carolina on Saturday. And yes, he gave up the walk-off home run, but honestly, he was on borrowed time in that game. Like, I'm surprised they brought him back out, but he was electric. Yeah. And I'd seen him pitch at Liberty. Like, I did their fall report a couple of years ago, and I wrote him up, and he was just okay. And his numbers at Liberty, frankly, were bad. But you could see there was like a good arm there, and but it just feels like, for whatever reason, at Carolina, he's been freed up to be a different person. Like, it's a low 90s fastball that'll touch a 95, but nobody hits it, especially up in the zone. And it's just like that Jaden Woods fastball from Georgia, where it just like takes off like an airplane. And so you got hitters thinking that they're going to get a sternum high fastball, and they swing and it's like at their neck, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's just no comfortable swings against his fastball. And this guy's a live wire though. Like, he's going to rile some opponents up, and that can be good and bad, because you can get people to react to it and be emotional, and it gets them off their game. But Clemson just kind of let it all like wash over them. And maybe that ended up helping. Maybe it didn't matter at all, but he, you know, fist pumped toward the Clemson dugout, and he pointed toward the Clemson dugout. And after a strikeout, he like took his hand and underlined the Carolina on his chest. Yeah. And then there was one time where he literally skipped like a school girl around the mound after a strikeout. Like, I mean, the dude is kind of a, like, it would not shock me if he ends up tossed at some point this season. Right. Like, he's a fun guy to watch. If you're neutral and you're just kind of observing, like, he's a fun guy to watch, but there's a little bit of a high wire act going on there. So,
that kind of reminds me of, you know, the Tennessee team from a couple of years ago, where people just had an opinion on it, right? It's polarizing. Mm-hmm. You either embrace it because you know, you're interested in it, you like those antics, or you're old school and you hate that kind of stuff.
You're just mad about it. Yeah.
There's no place for it in the game. And, you know, and personally, I don't know, it's sometimes sometimes some of that stuff will rub me the wrong way. And other times I'm like all about it and give me more of it. And I do think as I'm looking at it, you know, because I mean, we're trying to cover 14 teams here. There's a lot of stuff to keep up with. You look for things that you can have a connection to, whether it's positive or negative, right? You're interested in it. You want to see what happens. And so as I've matured or gotten older, I do kind of like those kinds of events now, because it does build that, you know, that connection to, you want to see what happens. It's kind of the soap opera mentality, right? You're the reality show or whatever. You want to see, what is this guy going to do next? Right. And maybe sometimes he takes it too far, and okay, well, that's fun to watch too. Right. Unless you're responsible for him, Mark Kingston's probably not real pleased sometimes, but for those of us who are not as invested, it is something to look at and kind of, you know, kind of follow as the year progresses. What is this guy going to do next time?
Yeah, I think it's some of it is just that, you know, the culture has changed around sports and baseball in particular, because mm-hmm. let's face it, baseball was the stodgiest of the sports in terms of letting people celebrate. In other sports, it's really not. I mean, I remember my mom telling me stories of, you know, growing up in Houston and they had Billy White Shoes Johnson on their team, and he's doing like the knees dance with his hands up, you know, like that's
too much. Uh-oh. Yeah.
But so the culture has changed enough to where like we see these guys celebrate now and the world did not cease to exist. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, I guess it's really not that big a deal then, you know. Anyway.
Hey everyone, we're gonna take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France, which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's Saucony.com.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection and cold-pressed to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Let's talk about Vanderbilt, Mark. A 3-0 weekend. We talked about LSU already. Let's talk about Vanderbilt. The two SEC teams really acquitted themselves well. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend in Houston. To me, the most interesting thing about Vanderbilt, having admittedly not seen as much of their three games, they had the early game all 3 days, which was just not working for Joe's schedule this weekend in terms of being able to see them with my own eyeballs. But looking at what they did, I think it's impressive that they won games a few different ways. They had games where they got good starting pitching, and then they had games like Sundays where they didn't get good starting pitching. Devin Futrell had a tough game, but the offense bailed him out, and they came back against Texas, a talented team, and win that game 14-11. So it showed a level of pliability to the way they can win games that I'm just not. If you'd have told me even going into the weekend that, hey, in Sunday's game, Texas is going to score 11 runs. I'd have been like, well, that's not a game Vanderbilt's winning. Right. You know, so the fact that they showed at least in an isolated event, they can win a game like that. That makes me optimistic about their ability to do that again in the future.
Yeah. I mean, Sunday, it was 11-3 at the end of the fourth. And they won it, you know, 14-11 and just shut them, you know, shut Texas down the rest of the way. So that's a team, you know, we wondered how they would score. You know, there's not that one guy in the middle of the lineup that, hey, we can't pitch to him, you know. But through the depth of the lineup, it seems like it's different guys, you know, every week. Camden Kozul, am I saying that right? The freshman, I mean, he's a future star. I mean, he stepped into the lineup right away. He had a huge game Sunday. I think he had 4 hits, homer, double. I mean, driving in a bunch of runs. He looks like the next one. And when you have a guy like that, and maybe he becomes, you know, their next hitting star. But there's depth in the lineup, and that's the thing with Vandy. I mean, we saw that last year. We wondered if they were going to score enough runs, and you know they were doubles machine and things like that. And I think it's a similar club this year. They're going to hit some home runs, but they're not going to be like a, you know, like a Florida or a Georgia at this point, or say even maybe South Carolina, but or A&M. But they're going to be able to score runs, I think. And now it becomes pitching wise, you have all those power arms, you have all that talent, and you probably have more arms than you can use. How do you figure that out? Who's going to pitch what role, what game? Grayson Carter looked good again in relief on Friday. I think maybe that's the role for him, is, you know, three, four innings of relief. Because he's been better in that role than he was, you know, as the opening week starter. And Carter Holton, I'm not worried about him. He's going to get where he needs to go. He was pretty good this week, and I think he will continue to figure it out. So then it's Cunningham's been pretty good on Saturdays. He was really good this week. And then Futrell, I mean, he's been he wasn't good today, but he's been good his whole career, and I think you know what you're going to get. So then it's, you know, who's going to pitch the end of the game? What are you going to do with those freshmen? You know, Corbs is throwing them in there in some pressure situations, and they've been able to for the most part pitch pretty well. So I think that's going to be a team, because of the young players, that they're going to continue to ascend. But when you look at what they did this week, I mean, they drilled Indiana State. They beat Evansville. They had a 5-0 week, right, including a win over Texas in Houston. So I do think that, you know, while we're saying that this is a club that is not playing its best baseball yet, they're still pretty freaking good right now. So I think that's, you know, they're a team that'll be interesting to see. Remember last year when we had concerns about their offense, their batting average was really low before the season started. Then they went into SEC play and they were just lighting everybody up. Don't be surprised if, you know, there's something similar going on, because they definitely have enough pieces that this can be a really potent offense.
Yeah, I might like the individual. I mean, would they like to have an RJ Schreck in the middle of the order? Sure. Yeah. But in terms of raw talent, like, now that I've seen it, like I think I might like this group more, frankly. I mean, because you're right about Kozul. Like you said, he's, you know, future star. The future might be like right now.
Yeah, maybe March.
Right. Yeah. RJ Austin has looked really good. Looks like he's taken a step forward. I mean, dude has 10 stolen bases already. Jaden Davis has been a really nice addition. I don't say dubious of him at Vanderbilt, but was just kind of curious, like, will that translate? So far, I mean, he's not in SEC play yet, but so far so good there. So, you know, I think I might like this lineup more from a sheer talent perspective than last year's. And some people have asked me about, what do you make of Vanderbilt's pitching? Their ERA is not quite where you would expect it to be. And I would say a couple things. One is that Carter Holton has probably been the unluckiest starting pitcher in the SEC the last 2 weeks. you know, watched him pitch. That was some of the game I did see, was when Holton pitched, and it was like, you know, defensive miscue, bloop, dribbler, like, you know, in the previous week, it was kind of the same thing. So, you know, talk to me in a couple weeks, I think, with Vanderbilt pitching, and we can reassess. But ultimately, I come out on the side of like, it'll probably be fine. Similarly, we can glide past this, but people are also asking me about Arkansas's offense. My company line on that is that the next time they have a bad offense under Dave Van Horn will be the first time.
Yeah.
Although I am intrigued by the idea that maybe, you know, maybe this is still a passable offense, but maybe one of the weaker ones we've seen Arkansas have. I mean, they didn't exactly light it up against Murray State, and right. Maybe Murray's good. I don't know, but you know, it is worth asking the question. That's another one. Talk to me in a couple weeks. Mark, I know you had, unless you had something there.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, with Arkansas, their starting pitching especially is just so good right now that, you know, that covers up a lot of returns on the offense. I mean, Hagan Smith was incredible yet again.
Yeah.
And he's not the only one. I mean, Tigard and Molina were really good as well.
Oh yeah, they've all been excellent. Yeah, that's great. I mean, as much as we talk about LSU's rotation, like Arkansas is still better, like clearly better at this point, at least statistically. Mark, you had Georgia thoughts here. I will rather than give you some elaborate setup, why don't you just tell me what you got in your mind with Georgia?
Well, Georgia just continues to impress. You know, with this was the best team they played. They played Georgia Tech this weekend. They had a you know, they've been able to continue to find wins in different ways. You know, they were down 9-3 on Sunday and came back and won. They also won a 3-1 game on Saturday. And then, of course, we talked about the Friday game that was suspended with them up. So, I mean, if that game continues, there's no guarantees. I mean, you saw 9-3. You know, they trail 9-3 and won. They could, you know, lead 9-3 and lose, but they were in great shape to take three games from Georgia Tech this weekend. And I know Georgia Tech is not what Georgia Tech was a few years ago, but that's still a really nice weekend for a first year head coach. And I think Wes is doing a really good job to this point. And it does make you wonder, you know, how, you know, once SEC play starts, you know, what are they going to look like? Because they're hitting a lot of home runs. They're finding outs on the mound. They're using a lot of different arms. And I think it's an interesting team to watch. You know, we joked all preseason, we don't know what to think of Georgia. And honestly, I still don't know what to think of Georgia. I've been impressed to this point, though. And I think that they have a chance to be right in the thick of, you know, the postseason hunt, and which I think would, you know, it's where they were last year. They just had a few things didn't go their way. And I think with, you know, with the new coach, with the new philosophy, just all the new players they brought in through the portal, I do think that this is a fascinating experiment to see how they're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, if the at the very least, they're spunky, they're playing hard. Mm-hmm. There's an energy there. And if that leads to them being kind of a bubble-ish team, like I think at a minimum, you'll take that as a baseline for a first year head coach. You have to like that. So mm-hmm. I'm on board with that. Mark, I will lay out a table, a cornucopia, if you will, of other things that have happened. Cause we're 46 minutes in and you know, it's a long day and you've still got writing to do.
You warned us. So
I know. Yeah. I'm going to lay out a cornucopia of things, and then I will allow you to elaborate on one. Maybe I'll elaborate on one after you're done, and then we'll call that a podcast. But Ole Miss got a much-needed series win against Iowa. Grayson Saunier was good today. Also, speaking of things they need, so that's helpful. Texas A&M, we see you, 11-0, weekend wins against USC and Arizona State. Kendall Rogers pointed out to me that they've got Texas on Tuesday on the road. But if they win that game, there's a very real chance A&M goes into SEC play 17-0 because they've got Texas Southern and then Rhode Island and then Sam Houston the following Tuesday, which that one, I guess, could also be tricky. But there's a very good chance they go into SEC play undefeated if they get past Texas on Tuesday. So that's interesting. Mississippi State, sure, it was Mount St. Mary's, but the starting pitching was very good there. Yeah. Missouri's pitching was not, except for Friday. You know, yeah. Friday they pitched okay, but lost. They scored 28 runs on Saturday, but gave up 10. But they won. And then on Sunday, they had one of the weirdest games that has ever existed in this sport and lose the series against Northern Kentucky. I have been on record as saying, like, if you're a Mizzou fan, like, you absolutely cannot focus on the record this year, almost. And I'm not just saying that because the record will be bad, although I think that might be what they're looking at. It's more just that, like, this is clearly just a table-setting year for what's mm-hmm. next in the Kerry Jackson era. So try to be more process-focused versus, yeah. like, results-focused. But even saying that, woof. So there's that. Auburn won 2 of 3 against UConn. That kind of went under the radar, but UConn probably going to be pretty good again because they always are. So there's that there. Let me go to the scoreboard and make sure I didn't miss anything else here, Mark, because I want to be exhaustive to give you all the options here. Tennessee sweeping Bowling Green. Not a lot there necessarily, although AJ Causey was great on Friday. I think that's noteworthy. Kentucky swept Lipscomb. Quietly, Kentucky is playing pretty well. They've handled their non-conference foes pretty handily for the most part. And that wraps up everything in the SEC this weekend. Mark, the choice is yours. What do you want to expound on a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'll hit a couple of them. I mean, Evan Prager has moved into the A&M Friday spot.
Ryan.
He's made three. Ryan? Yeah, I'm looking at the wrong name. Yeah.
Evan Aschenbeck.
Yeah, I guess he finished the game Friday. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So he's made three starts and has not given up a run yet. I mean, that's as good as you can do, right? And that's what, and he was a guy that we really didn't expect to be. I mean, maybe he would be in the rotation, maybe he wouldn't. And not only is he doing that, he's really good and off to a great start. A&M finally got tested. They played, you know, Arizona State twice. They played USC. Those are games they can lose, and they really, I guess, just kind of took care of business. So I'm all for it. If they can keep this rolling, go into SEC play undefeated, go down to Gainesville, oh, wouldn't that be massive? That would be as good a series as anyone could want. And then the other thing I want to mention is,
that was actually what I missed, by the way. It was Florida won their series against Miami, one of the bigger results.
Yeah,
that's the other thing. One of the other things on the board, Jack Caglione pitched really well on Sunday. That's great news. Liam Peterson kind of struggled on Saturday. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that's a thing or just a one-off because it's a road series against a good team.
Right.
Please continue, Mark.
Yeah, the other thing is, you know, Missouri fell behind 11-2 on Sunday in Game 3 and came back and took the lead. And then blew the lead and lost by a run. But, you know, it's to your point, it's just kind of one of those transition years where you're trying to build a foundation. You're trying to put your stamp on a program. But yeah, if you're dropping a series to Northern Kentucky and giving up 16 runs on a Sunday, I do have concerns about how things are going to go when you go to Fayette Bowl and you go to, you know, other SEC venues where they have better players than Northern Kentucky.
Yes, I think that's totally fair to say there. Yeah, I don't think we can totally underestimate, or I don't think it's possible to overestimate how important Ole Miss getting the rubber game today was.
Mm-hmm.
Just from the standpoint of Iowa's a good team. It's good pitching. Obviously, Iowa's a flawed team. They went 0-3 the weekend before in Jacksonville, so I get it. But that was a series that Ole Miss could have easily lost. You know, and in fact, Iowa jumped out to, like, I think it was a 5-1 lead on Saturday and looked like they were on the way to winning the series. Yeah. So good on Ole Miss to kind of turn the tide there kind of in the middle of that series and winning the back half of the series, if you will, the last two games. So they're clearly still, speaking of flawed teams, like, clearly they're not a fully formed version of the best version of themselves. Maybe they'll get there, maybe they won't, but if they had lost this series at home against a team that kind of came off last weekend reeling, it would continue to, it certainly would not have been good for morale locally. Mm-hmm. And it would start to just make those whispered questions about, hey, is this going to happen again? Like, are we going to be Mississippi State? Like what happened last year with them? Like that would have only gotten louder. By the way, those questions are not going away yet. Nope. Like they have to prove it in SEC play. However, this has at least kept things at bay a little bit because people understand that Iowa is a pretty good team. They're talented. You know, people know Brody Breck's name, if nothing else. You know, the casuals know him. So I thought that was big for Ole Miss to win it and to win it the way they did with the comeback on Saturday and then take care of business Sunday.
Yeah, and they're scoring runs. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. This is a lineup that, you know, when they were struggling earlier, they weren't. And now all of a sudden the light has come on and they're mashing people. If they pitch, they're going to be a problem for people. But that's the question.
That's the $64,000 question, to use a phrase from the past. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a podcast, Mark. We covered a lot of ground there. We covered as much as we could in depth, but frankly, yeah. Like again, we could have gone for hours here. That'll make up for next week when our podcast might be 17 minutes long because we just congratulate everyone on their weekends and then we move on to SEC play. But of course, this is baseball. It's probably not going to work out that way. So there will be at least something that surprises us, I am sure. Programming note, you know, check out all the stuff on D1Baseball.com, on SEC Extra. We'll have stuff, you know, all the usual stuff this week. Go back and read Mark's story on Jared Jones. I will have a feature out this week that I'll keep to myself in case something happens and I don't get it done. But I'm looking at having a feature done this week that I think everyone will enjoy. I'll have another episode of Highway to Hoover later this week with a beat writer or broadcaster, somebody from an SEC program to do a deep dive on a specific team. And I don't ask this very much, but if you enjoy the podcast, please go into your podcasting app, whatever it is, and give us the 5 stars or the thumbs up or the written review or whatever it is your podcast app asks you to do. We would be grateful if you would do that for us. We really do appreciate it. Again, I say this all the time. Mark and I don't take for granted that we get to turn these microphones on and talk about SEC baseball and actually have people give us money for it. Like that just sounds like absurd. And yet that is the reality. And that wouldn't be possible without you guys. So we are indebted to you guys for actually listening to a couple of jokers like us. So hit us with that review or rating or whatever it is you can do to help us out. We would greatly appreciate it. So thank you for that. And thank you for listening. Thank you to PitchLogic for sponsoring this and every episode of Highway to Hoover. And thank you to Mark for joining me as always. We'll talk to y'all soon.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's SAUCONY.com.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.